jostled the big man's shoulder. Still no response. He looked at the ice pack Henry had placed at the nape of Artie's neck. "What did you guys do to him?" I stood and now held the .45 behind my hat. "He's asleep, like everybody else except for you." He gestured with the pistol. "Come on in here. You guys are going to help me carry him out." I shrugged and shook my head at the youth, pretty sure that none of us were in imminent danger. I casually slipped my hat onto my head and made a show of stuffing my sidearm back into its holster. Quickly, I took a step forward, snatched the keys from Charles's raised hand, slammed the door shut, and locked the cell. I tossed the keyring into the hallway, where it struck with a jangle and slid to the far end of the tile floor. Nate looked at me and raised the pistol higher. "What did you just do?" "I just locked you in the cell." I sat on one of the chairs and looked at him as Artie continued to snore. He looked a little uncertain as to how to proceed from this point. "Fuck!" After a moment his arm wavered and then redirected itself at Charles, who still stood against the bars with his arms raised. "I'll shoot him!"
"Go ahead, I don't care for him that much anyway."
Charles turned his head and looked at me with his eyes a little rounded. Nate swung the revolver back at my face. "I'll shoot you!" I casually palmed the Colt from the small of my back and rested it on my knee. "You do, and I'll shoot you back." He literally stamped a tennis shoe.
"Fuck!"
I readjusted my bed, yawned again, then made a big show of stretching. "Here's a deal. You give me both guns, I unlock you, you go home, and we all get a good night's sleep." I holstered the Colt and stood. "How about it?"
"Fuck!
I need a different answer." He glanced at his snoring uncle, at Charles, and then back to me.
"How do I know I can trust you, man?"
I distended my cheeks with a hearty exhale.
"You're kidding, right?"
I stuck a hand through the bars and motioned for him to hand me the drawn gun. He didn't move at first, but then his grip relaxed on the revolver and it swung down, dangling from his index finger. I studied it in hopes that it wasn't the same caliber as the one that had killed Clarence. It was, but I could tell it hadn't been fired in a long time. I gestured toward the semi-automatic in the waistband of his jeans.
"That one, too."
He handed them to me, and I stood there looking like I had just come from Bed Bath and Pistols. "I'm going to go get the keys, and then I'll unlock you and you can get out of here. I'd be quick about it because I've got a sneaking suspicion that Charles here is going to want to beat the hell out of you." I glanced at the big patrolman.
"I got that right, Chuck?"
He nodded and grunted. I retrieved the keys, came back and unlocked the door, handed the ring and sidearm back to Charles as a more contrite Nate stood by the bars. When the young man attempted to follow the patrolman, I placed a hand on his chest.
"Hey, you said that
after I ask you a few questions." The sullenness returned in a flash.
"And what if I don't want to answer?"
I gestured toward the big tribal policeman who was holstering his weapon. "Then I stuff Charles back in here, lock the door again, and go take a walk for about 5 minutes." I glanced at the patrolman's pockmarked face.
"That about how long it'll take, Chuckles?"
"2. The large man had become remarkably more conversational. I held up the revolver. "Where'd you get the gun?" He grimaced.
"Artie's locker at Grandma's house."
"I don't suppose you'd know where Artie's been since night before last?" He nodded.
"Eating the elk at the house."
I stuffed the revolver into my own jeans.
"He came back after we left?"
"Yeah."
"He was there the whole time?"
"Yeah."
"Were you there the whole time?"
"No, I got work up at KRZZ.
I thought about it.
"How'd you get here?"
He shot a look at his sleeping uncle.
"Artie's truck."
"The one you tried to run me over with?"
Yeah.
"Nate, did you know that you say, every time you lie?" I shook my head and thought about the sleep I was losing. "You're not the one who tried to run me over. I think that you're trying to cover for your uncle, but in all honesty, I don't think he was behind the wheel either." I felt a sudden surge of exhaustion and leaned my head against the bars and closed my eyes. I'm thinking that whoever stole Artie's truck at the bar was the one who tried to run me over, and that someone might have a connection to Audrey's and Clarence's deaths. His attention, at least, was piqued. You think?
I think.
I opened my eyes and studied him. Who else was at the Jimtown bar that night? He made a face. Everybody? He gestured. He was there. I glanced at the patrolman.
Charles?
Yeah.
Who was there, Charles?
He snorted. Everybody. I squeezed the bridge of my nose. You know, I'm going to lock the both of you back in here in a minute. Nate was the first to break. Me and a buddy of mine, we were just sitting on the tailgate of the truck, but then a friend of ours came by and said he'd buy us a beer.
Who?
Kelly Joe Burns?
That loser again. Who else?
Herbert, his good horse, came in and grabbed a six-pack to go. We tried to cadge a few off of him, but he wouldn't give us any. He thought. Louise Griffin was there with Inez Tutu.
I frowned. She's underage.
So? He paused and then continued. Besides, her mother, you know, Lorraine, the one who works over at Human Services, came and dragged her out. Boy, was Inez pissed.
I gestured toward the snoring man. Was your uncle there?
No.
Anybody borrow your keys?
He smirked. It's a res ride, man. You don't need keys. It's got two little wires that stick out from under the dash, but you got to turn on the headlights first.
How many people would know that?
On the res? Everybody. Half the cars around here don't have keys, and the other half don't have forward gears.
He smiled.
I have a Chevy Corsica that I drove in reverse for 7 months. You have to hook up the wires on it, too.
Speaking of hooking up, I've got another question. Does Artie have a girlfriend?
What?
I sighed and tapped my shirt pocket where I'd stored the CD. There is a recording of your uncle talking to Clarence Lastbull on the phone, and there's a woman in the background with him. If I can find out who that woman is, maybe she can go to bat for your uncle. The young man stared at me, and for the first time he relaxed.
You really don't think Artie did it, do you?
No, I don't.
He thought. He was hitting on some chick up on the Rocky Boy Reservation, but I think she got engaged or something.
What about the dental hygienist from Billings?
Old news.
I stepped back and allowed him egress from the cell. Oh, well, it was a thought.
He stood there, looking at me. How about I listen to the CD?
I don't have a player.
We can go up to KRZZ, or I've got one in Artie's truck.
I shook my head in disbelief. You don't have a starter switch, but you've got a CD player?
I work at a radio station.
He transitioned into his on-air voice.
Pumping the wattage into your little red cottage.
He smiled, started for the hallway, and tried to get past Charles, who stepped in front of him. The big man placed himself between Nate and the wide world. He leaned in. You ever pull a gun on me again, you better use it.
Okay.
The kid's response was too quick for Charles's taste. Charles had him up in the air and against the wall faster than I could have possibly reacted. He grabbed fistfuls of the young man's shirt and then slammed him against the concrete block. It took both hands, but I wrenched one thumb away, reverse-wrist-locked the large man all the way down the hallway, and shoved him against the far door with a heavy thump. I held him there until he stopped struggling. Knock it off! He didn't respond verbally, no surprise there, and tried to throw his body against me. I applied so much pressure that I was afraid I was going to dislocate his thumb. I repeated the words again and felt his body relax just a bit. I let him go and stepped back. He turned quickly and squared off with me, his face red from the exertion. Keep your hands off me. I raised mine just to indicate that I was done for now. How about we all just keep our hands to ourselves?
Charles raised a finger and pointed at Nate.
Get him out of my jail. Nate and I were sitting in Artie's truck in the tribal police parking lot, under the yellowish glow of the arc lights, as the young man pulled on the light switch and then held the two wires together, causing the small block to cough, sputter, and then rumble into a lopsided idle.
You gotta have the engine running to get the player to work.
I handed him the CD from my pocket. He took it and slipped it into the slot in the dash. We listened to the whole recording three times. I'm sorry, but it's not broken into tracks, so we have to listen to it all.
That's all right.
He leaned in at the portion of the recording where the woman was speaking in the background and focused on what seemed to be the one discernible word. He swallowed and then hit the eject button and handed me the CD.
Do you recognize the woman's voice?
No.
Neither do I, but I probably wouldn't.
I tipped my hat back and looked into the night, the streetlights of Lame Deer trailing away from 212 into the heart of darkness.
Well, it was worth a try. The word she says?
Yep, I still can't quite make it out. Something about dome or dose?
Dole. She's saying dole. It's a word my grandmother uses.
I waited a moment. You think that's your grandmother?
No, but that's the word the woman is using, dole.
My limitations loomed audible. What about the music in the background?
The jukebox up at Jimtown is always playing.
He shrugged and slipped the truck into reverse.
I can take us to a place where we can hear everything that's on there.
I grabbed the open passenger door and held it. I can't go anywhere. He looked incredulous.
What, you're still under arrest?
I looked past him and into the lighted windows of the tribal police headquarters. Do I have to remind you who Charles's half-brother is? He cleared his throat and rubbed his neck where the patrolman's grip still showed red.
Oh, man.
He dipped his head and looked up the hill to the blinking light at the top of the radio tower.
KRZZ's got production studios that can do anything. Slow the track down, pump up different levels.
He looked at the wristwatch on the carabiner attached to his belt loop.
I gotta be up there in 2 hours anyway. Why don't you meet me there?
I thought Herbert his good horse did morning drive.
He does, but he also gets hung over, and I got stuck pulling doubles.
He shrugged.
That was mean. He takes care of his nephew, the one that's got no legs.
I saw a poster of him winning some marathon in Japan.
He's unreal.
I nodded. If you're going to be up there all morning, I'll head up to the radio station once Chief Long comes in and replaces Charles.
Cool, man.
Well, I'd better get back inside before Charles tries to drown your uncle in the toilet. I closed the door. Nate tossed a worried look to the jail as I walked around the truck.
Hey, Nate.
I pulled the small revolver from my belt and tossed it into his lap through the open window. No more of this Indian outlaw stuff, okay? He looked genuinely embarrassed.
Okay.
Inside, I found Charles reading the newspaper with his feet up on the counter, the black-and-white monitors showing the holding cell, the duty room, and the parking lot where Nate was turning around and pulling away. I yawned and placed my elbows on the high counter. I'm thinking you need to put a few hours into some sensitivity training seminars. He was reading the Billings Gazette but looked up at me. Predictably, he said nothing. Just for the record, I don't think Artie's the one who killed your brother, which means that the person that did do it is still out there and needs to be brought to justice. Have you got any ideas of who might have held a grudge against Clarence and his family? He folded the paper, placed it in his lap, and looked at me. Everybody has enemies. Including you? He cocked his head. Including me. It goes with the job. Anybody dislike you enough to go after your half-brother? He shrugged. How about Audrey and Adrian? I stifled the yawn in my throat. That's a lot of dislike. He unfolded his paper and rustled it to straighten the pages. You know, generally, you don't have to look very far for people who do things like this. It's usually friends, so-called, or family. He continued to study his paper. It seems to me that somebody is looking to wipe out your entire family, Charles. And you don't seem to care. The tribal policeman's voice rumbled over the Billings Gazette.
I care enough that if you leave here for another 5 minutes, I'll go into that holding cell and do society a favor.
I waited a moment and then continued on like a wrecking ball.
You a killer, Charles?
After a moment, he released one side of the paper, lowered his hand to hit the button under the counter so that the door behind me buzzed in a persistent manner. He sat there with that expressionless look on his face and watched me. I straightened up, took the two steps to the door and yanked the thing open, his stare following me into the hallway.
Good to know, since we're looking for one.
Chapter 13.
I was having this dream where the talking animals were at it again. Even Dog was having a go at me. It was only when he asked me the second time if I wanted coffee that I started thinking that things seemed suspicious. Flapping my eyelids open and shut cleared a little of the bleariness and allowed me to focus. Lolo Long had pulled up another folding chair from the Law Enforcement Center's endless supply and was holding two cups from the White Buffalo convenience store, a manila folder under her arm again.
I understand we had an attempted jailbreak last night.
I peeled the blanket back a little more. As jailbreaks go, it wasn't much. I sat up and looked out the small rectangular window at the sky, already worn to a lighter shade of blue.
It's mid-morning? Say, you are a detective.
I slumped back onto my blanket pillow.
Shoot me?
There is a member of my dwindled staff who would be happy to comply with that request, but in consolation, I bring you coffee and photographs.
I struggled up and thought my back was going to fragment like not-so-fine china. Groaning, I reached out and took the styrofoam cup she proffered. Written on the side, in a ridiculously perky font, were the words, "Fresh Brewed."
I undid the top and looked at the complex, frothy content with what looked like mouse droppings decorating the top. "What is this?"
She leaned forward, taking a look in mine, and then undid her own and traded cups with me. "Sorry, mocha chip frappuccino."
"You're kidding."
She sipped what she called coffee and raised one of those samurai sword eyebrows.
"I take my comforts where I can."
She handed me the envelope.
"Here are the photos from Henry's camera that you guys took. There's not much there, but one thing jumped out at me."
I pulled out the prints and looked at them one at a time, finally looking up at her. She wasn't facing forward when she went over.
"No," she sighed. "And as far as I know, nobody does a suicide holding their child and attempting a backflip."
She waited a few moments. "There's nothing else that I can tell."
"Me either."
I placed the photos back in the envelope, careful to close the metal tabs. Long glanced at the still-snoring man in the holding cell.
"You caught Artie."
"Henry caught Artie." I sipped my regular black coffee and watched as she made the same face she always did whenever I mentioned the Cheyenne Nation.
"How come the cavalry hasn't shown up?"
"The feds?"
"Yep."
"I don't think they know. No access to the moccasin telegraph."
I thought about it. "Let's keep it that way for a while, shall we?"
After I'd given her the rundown on last night's events, she stood and walked over to the bars.
"Strange behavior for a guilty man."
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, if he was guilty, why would he care what I thought?
I stretched the remnants of my back.
"We played the recording for him."
"What did he say?"
"That he didn't do it." She turned to look at me.
"What do you think?"
"That he didn't do it."
She nodded her head in a defeated fashion.
"Well, our only other suspect is dead."
"Inconvenient, isn't it?"
I strained a little more coffee through my teeth.
"Have you listened to the recording?"
"Your buddy Cliff Cly played it for me yesterday. But the sound isn't so good."
"You didn't happen to hear a woman in the background, did you?"
She turned her full attention to me, placing her broad back against the bars of the holding cell.
"No, I mean, we were listening to Clarence and Artie. I don't think anybody paid much attention to anything else."
"Did you hear music in the background?"
"Kind of."
"Well, fortunately, I've got an expert in the field who says he can help us out."
"Who?"
"The jailbreaker."
She looked dubious.
"Nate?"
I gestured toward the snoring man. "He's got a vested interest."
"I can call my mother and have her bring in food and Artie sit."
She nodded and continued chewing her coffee.
"As you know, we've got a shower here. Would you like to use it?"
I ruffled my hand through my hat hair. I'm sure causing it to stand up at all angles.
Is that a hint?
She did her best to suppress the grin caused by my appearance, but failed miserably.
Could be.
I didn't have any clean clothes to change into, but Chief Long was kind enough to loan me a shirt from Tribal Police Supplies, with a nifty little patch set like hers, but with the name Pretty Weasel printed on the pocket. Is this my undercover name? She drove south on the gravel road leading to the radio station, the tail end of the Yukon swinging around behind us like a flat-track racer.
What?
I braced a hand against the dash. Nothing. KRZZ's was not the most inspiring of buildings, but then most everything concerning radio rarely is. I'd done a brief semester as a freshman at KUSC, University of Southern California student radio station, where I'd been the worst DJ they'd ever heard. The programming in the early 60s was almost exclusively classical and didn't require a great deal of talk between the 20-minute tracks, but even I had to admit that I was horrible. It looked to be a utilitarian building from the 60s, with a slab roof and a wall of small pane windows overlooking what there was of downtown Lame Deer. The white paint was peeling off the concrete block, and the front screen door was propped open with a cardboard box full of CDs that had been marked on the side with the plea, "Take me, I'm free." There was a battered Honda Civic in the parking lot, as well as Artie's truck. Lolo parked and we got out. I could hear music drifting through the open door, John Trudell's Bone Days, a Stream of Consciousness blues opus I recognized from hanging around Henry. In the tubular-style font of the 70s were the words KRZZ, low power, high res, the lettering also peeling like a second-day sunburn. Looks like native radio has seen better days. Inside there was a green carpet that showed the fiber grid underneath, and a surplus steel government desk where a pretty enough young woman who was a friend of Melissa Littlebird's was working on a book full of Sudoku. She raised her head as we entered.
Can I help you?
Lolo looked at the large poster behind the girl's head. It was a badly done offset print of four men dressed in period Western costume with the words, "Reggae Cowboys, I Shot the Sheriff," in red. She glanced at me.
No offense.
None taken. I thumbed my tribal police patch. Anyway, Papa's got a brand new bag. The young woman was uncertain, looked at the two of us, and decided the only course was to repeat her request.
Can I help you?
I smiled. I'm sorry, is Nate here? She rolled her eyes toward the inner sanctum and immediately went back to the puzzles as we turned and made our way into another room with a few more desks and a glass wall that gave a view of the on-air studio, principally discerned by the large red light with white lettering that read, "On Air." Nate was standing in the middle, swaying to the native beat poet's words and the searing guitar accompaniment. I stepped forward and knocked on the thick glass. The young man couldn't hear us with the headphones on, so I knocked a little louder, afraid that if I applied much more pressure, the glass would most certainly fall out of the frame onto the floor. Nate finally swayed around so that he was looking at us, and immediately motioned that we should join him through the door he pointed to at the left. KRZZ's studio was a world apart from the tawdry outer office where the receptionist sat. There were multiple computer screens, sound boards, with about 100 slide controls, and banks of CD and computer inputs. The inside of the room was covered in acoustical foam, and at the center was a stylish air-cushioned chair. There was another window to the outside, but it was so plastered with Indian Power, AIM, Thunder Child, and New Day Four Dances drum group stickers that I doubted you could tell the weather by looking out of it.
Welcome to the Nerve Center. Federal grants can go only to actual transmission equipment. Say what you want about Herbert, his good horse. He knows how to write grants.
It was an impressive setup, I guess.
Hold on just a second.
He reached up, and just as the song finished, swung the elevated mic in front of his face.
John Trudell, my brothers and sisters, just a human being trying to make it in a world that is rapidly losing its understanding of being human. It's 10 o'clock in the a.m., daytime for you Indians, and you're listening to KRZZ 94.7, low power, high res, the voice of the Northern Cheyenne Reservation.
Nesta Evahu Sevumatse.
He touched another button on the computer,
and a strong drumbeat filled the studio with background singers chanting something I vaguely recognized.
Are they singing about Mighty Mouse?
Nate smiled. Yeah, a group called Black Lodge. It's a favorite of the kids down at the elementary school. I pulled the CD out of my pocket, slipped it from the paper envelope, and handed it to him. This isn't likely to make it on your top 10 list, Lolo added.
Even with a bullet.
Nate put the CD in one of the players, punched a few buttons, and we listened to the beginning of the recording before realizing we were hearing it over the same speakers as the Mighty Mouse powwow song.
Is that going out over the air?
He rapidly hit a few more buttons and made a face.
Just a little.
I don't know if this is a two-party consent state, but I'm pretty sure we could get sued for what just happened.
He shrugged.
We'll just keep it between ourselves.
And a couple of thousand listeners?
He adjusted the volume on another off-air track.
I think you're overestimating our listenership.
I glanced at the studio phone as the lights began blinking, not unlike the ones in my office that regularly plagued me.
Uh-huh.
We ignored them and carefully listened to the recording again, but I couldn't make out any more than I had before. Nate's fingers danced on the computer keyboard, and then he hit a button on the CD player and handed the recording to me. I downloaded it to the computer, so now we can manipulate it any way we want. The Sudoku woman flung open the studio door.
Nate, did you just put some kind of crazy shit on the air? People are calling and want to hear the John Trudell song about Mighty Mouse again.
Tell them it was a demo.
He flicked his hand at her, and she disappeared. He hit a few more buttons and turned down the on-air volume, and we were once again listening to the hiring of a hitman. We got to the portion where I thought I'd heard music. Nate's fingers tapped on the keyboard and isolated the track, bringing the background noise up and the primary voice down, allowing us to hear the melody of something.
Do you recognize that song?
He listened intently to the simple chord progression but shook his head.
No.
Lolo leaned in and propped an arm on the counter.
Play it again.
Nate did as he was told, and we listened to the music as he lifted the volume. A strong bass baritone and a chick-a-boom rhythm passed through the speakers.
Jail was off in his home. They let him raise the flag and lower it.
The rest was lost in the background noise and angry voices. Johnny Cash. That's the ballad of Ira Hayes. Nate looked at me.
Who?
Lolo Long gently slapped him in the back of the head.
The Pima Indian who helped raise the flag at Iwo Jima.
She glanced at me and gestured toward Nate.
This is what we fought for. You know that, right?
When was that?
She looked at him.
Iwo Jima? No, the song. When was it released?
I thought about it. Before I went to Vietnam. 64, I'd guess. He made a face.
The '60s? No wonder I don't know it.
He looked at the CD player as if it held the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Wow, man.
I glanced at the chief.
Well, we need to go up to the Jimtown bar anyway. I don't think anybody's going to remember anything, but we've got to leg it out. I've got a couple of hours before Katie and Lena come back from Colstrip.
I gestured toward the computer again.
Can you play the part with a woman's voice?
He did, but the only word that I could discern was the word dome, dose, dole. Lolo Long had a strange look on her face.
Play it again.
Nate did as he was told and then played it again and again. I leaned a little forward to get her attention as she stared at the blank screen.
Anything?
She didn't hear me or she was concentrating.
Do you know who it is?
Even Nate turned to look at her, but she shook her head.
No. I thought for a minute, but...
What?
Nothing.
I studied her.
You're sure?
She straightened and stepped back from the counter.
Yeah.
I sighed and looked at Nate.
You?
He shook his head.
Sorry. I wish I did, believe me.
I do. I patted him on the shoulder. We're going to head up to Jimtown and ask around. Do you think you can keep manipulating the recording so that we can try and get more out of it? I paused. Without putting it on the air? He smiled and looked at the lights still blinking on the phone.
Hey, man, I may have produced a hit here.
Chief Long had been silent in the 5 miles up to the notorious drinking establishment. It had been a quick 5 miles, but 5 miles nonetheless. She slid the Yukon to a stop in front of the steel-red posts sticking up in front of the Jimtown Bar's front door, likely there to keep the patrons from instituting an impromptu drive-through, and sat staring at the dash, the midday sun drying the irrigation water in the surrounding hayfield with wisps of vapor trailing up from the ground.
Something wrong?
I'm thinking.
About?
She looked at me as if I'd just fallen off the official sheriff's only turnip truck. I'm just wondering how complex this case is, you know?
I nodded. It usually is complicated when it concerns matters of the heart. Things tend to get venal and earthy.
She pressed her lips together. So you don't think it's a hidden gold mine or about nuclear weapons?
I smiled. No, I don't. I think it's something small, something personal, and probably something stupid.
I waited a moment.
You got anything you want to tell me, Chief?
She looked at me for a long moment and then pulled the handle and threw open her door. Not really.